Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the D-Raise Bay Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brett Rutherford, and joined today by two very special guests. They are prospects in the Tampa Bay Rays organization and the hosts of the Diamonds in the Rough podcast. It's Cole Wilcox and Nick Schnell. What's going on, guys?
What's up? How we doing?
You know, doing all right. I know, big game tonight for Cole Wilcox. This will come out tomorrow, but being a former Georgia Bulldog, is Bulldogs playing Alabama in the national championship tonight. So, Cole, even though this is going to be out after the game is played, I got to hear what your official prediction is for it.
Yeah, no, I'm mentally locked in right now. It's hard to think of anything else. I was going through my rehab this morning, Nick Saban on my mind, and you know, hopefully we can get over the hump. I honestly have no idea what to expect. My heart says 31-20 Dogs, but I could also see, you know, it going south pretty quick. So hopefully we play like we can. I feel like if we play like we can, we're better than them, and we'll see what happens.
It feels like it's Georgia's year, but I felt that way a couple of years ago when they played them in the national title game, and then a guy by the name of Tua Tagovailoa came in and kind of put a stop to that.
That team was ridiculously good, though. Like, you go back and look at that roster, and this is the first year where I feel like it's even playing field, and Georgia might have the advantage roster-wise. But, no, that year was ridiculous offense from Alabama. I mean, you had four wide receivers that went in the first round. Actually, five with Ridley.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick, you had a read on tonight's game?
Well, just because I got Cole as my buddy, I think. I've turned into a huge Georgia Bulldog fan this year. So,
hey, are the fans barking at Indy now?
I can hear them right now. Actually, they're barking. Funny you say that. Yeah, I can hear them. But I think it's going to be like a 34-28 finish, Georgia.
All right, I can see it. It's weird. Like, these two teams, you wouldn't expect up until the last recent years, a high scoring game, and I think that's kind of what everybody expects today. Like, usually you'd see totals set in the low 50s, and I think, I don't know what the total's at tonight, but I think expecting points on both sides.
Yeah, I'm sure Cole knows the total. I'm not sure. I haven't looked either.
I don't think I know. I think it's like 52.5. Really? I'm expecting low, though.
Okay. Are you?
Yeah, right. I'm expecting low. I mean, 31-20 hits the under.
Yeah, that's true.
So, guys, I want to talk about the podcast a little bit later on the show. I love what you guys have been doing starting that show up. But I really kind of want to take some time to talk to you guys about, you know, minor league baseball and your careers to this point. Now, Nick, you were drafted in 2018 by the Rays and went straight out of high school into pro ball. What was that transition like? I've always been curious, going from being an 18-year-old kid, a senior in high school, to playing professional baseball.
Yeah, it was a big jump. I think Cole and I have talked about it a couple times. At the time, you feel like, okay, like everybody talks about how big of a jump it is. And you're like, yeah, okay, I think I'm ready for it. But then you get there and you realize, oh, okay, like I've been playing Indiana high school baseball and through my career at like hitting 470 every year in high school. And then you go into rookie ball and it's definitely humbling to get there and realize like, okay, you're playing with grown men now. So I think the biggest adjustment for me was like the consistency of it. Being in Indiana, you play twice a week, probably maybe three times a week, but then you get down there and you're playing every single day. You got to be locked in every single day. You're playing, you're not seeing a guy throwing 90 every 2 weeks. You're seeing guys throwing 95 to 100 every single day. So it's a big adjustment, but like looking back on it for me, I can't imagine doing it any other way. I've really enjoyed being in the Rays organization. I mean, they do everything the right way. And I was really happy when they picked me, and I've been really happy that I've been with them since then.
I've got another question for you about the Rays organization. Obviously, you guys were part of just a stellar Charleston team this year. But, Nick, now you've been with the Rays organization for a few years now. Do you really feel like, from the outside, it looks like there's an emphasis on winning at the minor league level within the Rays organization? Something that might not exist as much with other organizations where they're focused on, you know, individual player development. But do you feel that there's an organization-wide desire to win at every level?
Yeah, I feel like that's one of the stigmas of minor league baseball kind of coming into it. People are like, it's not as much about winning. It's more about developing. I mean, with the Rays, I would say it's just kind of expected. Like, we know how good of an organization we have. We know how good. I mean, we have our probably top 60 prospects, like our 60th prospect could probably jump in the top 30 of most of other teams' top 30 prospects. You know what I mean? So I think everybody just as a competitor, I think you just go out there and you're fighting to win. But as an organization, I think it's big for the Rays to go out and show, okay, hey, we aren't here just to develop. We're here to win. I mean, we showed it this year between Charleston. I think Montgomery was the only team that didn't finish first in their division, and they ended up making it to the championship and taking that series to the last game, and it was a close game, I'm pretty sure. So I think everybody, just the competitive nature kind of takes over, and it's the atmosphere they build, I'd say, just the hard work, and that just pours into the game, and it's just expected that when we go out there, we're gonna win. So
do you think part of that too, as you mentioned, how deep the farm system is with talent, do you think, you know, it's guys competing against each other, you know, that you think that competition breeds success?
100%. Yeah. I mean, anytime you get, when you get to professional baseball, you got a bunch of alphas in the same room. Like, everybody believes in themselves. Like, you can't get to this point in your career if you don't believe in yourself and believe in the abilities you have. So when you get a bunch of guys with that same mentality in the same locker room, it creates a competitive nature, and that only is going to help you throughout your career. Cause nothing's going to come easy. You know what I mean? You're going to have to work for everything that you get. And I think that's really helped me throughout my career. I think that was another kind of eye-opening thing for me, is when I got into pro ball high school. I mean, I still worked really hard, but I didn't have anybody really pushing me. It was almost like people hands off. We don't want to mess with him. And now it's like, I can see, like, learn from other people, the competitiveness, everybody is pushing each other to get better. So the atmosphere the Rays have developed is really incredible.
And Cole, you know, you pitched at the University of Georgia in what was a stacked full of talent pitching staff, and then were drafted in 2020, the weirdest draft I've ever seen, only 5 rounds, middle of a pandemic, there was no minor league season. What was that like, into the San Diego Padres organization, getting drafted and then thinking, okay, what's next? We have no idea when minor league baseball is going to come back.
Yeah, it was wild. It was a crazy year for everybody, but, you know, especially guys who are getting drafted, because, you know, once the year ended for college, we really didn't know like what to do after that point. It was we didn't have a goal of like what to throw for, like a date, like what was going to happen. So I was just kind of throwing. I didn't even throw any bullpens after the season was over. My arm was in shape, but I wasn't really off the mound. So once the Padres drafted me, there was some negotiating to go on, but they made it clear they wanted me to come to the alternate site. So that helped out a lot, you know, being able to go and pitch some and get some innings in. And so I'm not, you know, far behind my development and stuff. So it was a really good experience. They were, you know, a really good organization. They treated me really well. A lot of good people over there. And I was thankful for the opportunity they gave me. And it was a good experience for sure.
Well, what went on like day to day at the alt site? We had like some reports that would come out, but there were no games being played. Teams kept a lot close to the vest. What was going on like day to day when you were there at the alternate site?
We were pretty aggressive, and, you know, talking to a lot of guys on our podcast and stuff that had been to other alternate sites is a little different. And so we would get there and, you know, have like a practice. Pitchers would throw, position players would take ground balls, base run, like, you know, normal stuff. And we scrimmaged every day. Like, I was on a pretty tight schedule of, you know, every 6 day throwing 5 innings. So, I mean, it felt like a normal year to me. Obviously pitching was a little different. You know, you're facing a lot of the same guys, and it's in a very different environment than you're used to pitching in, but it was really good. Like, I mean, I learned a lot about myself, and being able to face the same guys over and over again, you have to do something different. You have to learn different things. So it was a really good learning experience, and I know a lot of guys that I've talked to from around the league said the same thing. It was a really good development time for a lot of us.
And then I got to ask you, after the 2020 season, shortly after Christmas, your name gets involved in a major trade involving a former Cy Young Award winner. What was that experience like?
It was cool, honestly. You know, if you're going to get traded, you want it to be like that. You know, you want it to be in a blockbuster. And so, obviously, you understand both sides. You know, a lot of people don't understand the business side of baseball, where both teams are trying to benefit off a trade, believe it or not. Like, it's not somebody getting rid of somebody. And that's hard to explain to a lot of people. And because, you know, I had a lot of people ask me, like, why are the Rays getting rid of Blake Snell, or why are the Padres get rid of you? Like, it's like when you go to the store, I mean, you got to trade a $20 bill to get whatever you want. Like, it's trade happens everywhere. So it was, that was the hardest part, is just trying to, you know, answer a lot of questions about it, honestly. But the whole experience was cool. You know, it was one of those things where I saw it on TV first. I saw that Blake Snell had been traded, and I checked Twitter and saw my name involved, and then started getting some calls like throughout the day. But it was in the off season, so it was an easy transition. Like, it wasn't like I was being shipped from one place to the other. I was at home and just went straight to Florida once spring training started. So it was a pretty easy adjustment. And obviously the Rays did a really good job of bringing me in and making me feel at home.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Rays aren't going to get rid of a guy like Snell unless they got a return like they did with, you know, Patino, Mejia, you, obviously, and Blake Hunt. And, you know, what you guys have done already in the organization has been huge. What was that transition like, though, once you got down to Florida for spring training at the start of last year, getting kind of ingratiated with the Rays organization?
Yeah, you know, I'd met a lot of people with the Padres because I went from the alternate side to instructs. So I'd met pretty much everybody. And so, you know, you just got comfortable. You just learned everybody, knew the lay of the land, and then, you know, get sent somewhere else. So the biggest adjustment was just coming in and trying to figure things out, you know, how things were ran, where things are, who's who. Like, you know, they say, go talk to this guy. And I'm like, well, I don't have no idea who that is. So once you figure all that stuff out, it's pretty easy. It's just baseball. I mean, there's not much you can change about pitching. Like, it's just what you do. So you're just wearing a different uniform. So the baseball side, it was a very easy transition, just kind of figuring things out, because every organization does stuff different. And, you know, you want to get accustomed into whatever organization you're in and what they're doing. So it was pretty quick, though. They did a really good job of translating it to me, and it was pretty easy transition.
Now, other than going through workouts and doing alternate site stuff, what did 2020 look like for a minor league baseball player? You know, no official minor league season. I imagine there's a lot of video games in there, maybe some other stuff to just pass the time. What else were you guys just kind of up to trying to get through the year?
Well, I wasn't at the alternate site. So actually, when spring training was happening and everything, like NBA, I think NBA was first. They shut down. And then everybody was at like the team hotel, like, what's going to happen with us? What's going to happen with us? And we thought it was going to be like a week or two. So
we all did.
Yeah. My wife was my girlfriend at the time. And so I was like, hey, I think that the season's going to get like shut down for a bit. Like, I think I'm just going to fly out, if that's cool, and hang out with you for like a week. And then I think we'll be back to playing. And her mom and stepdad have a mountain house in Colorado. So I flew out there and I ended up getting stuck in a mountain house quarantining for like 60 days.
There are worse places to be.
Yeah, Grant Witherspoon, another player with the Rays, he lives out there like 20 minutes away. So we would meet up at this little, like, I don't even think it's like just this little park that had a baseball field on it. We'd throw stuff like that. And then finally, his facility kind of on the low key opened a little bit. And so we would go in there and hit. And then my parents drove out and picked me and my wife up and drove us back, and then we were in Indiana, and I had enough connections here that when I got back here I could get to wherever I needed to do what I needed to do. So it ended up turning, once I got back home, it pretty much turned into a normal like off season for me. But it was weird being home with like leaves on the trees. It was warm because I'm used to being home in Indiana and it being freezing cold. And so it was kind of nice to be able to take that time to like enjoy being home. But at the same time, it was like, I want to be out there playing, and any ounce of baseball I could get in watching it or whatever, I was trying to get in. So it really just turned into like a normal off season for me. But at first we all thought it was just going to be a couple weeks, and then next thing you know, we don't have a season. So
I was talking to my college roommate the other day because I stayed in Athens during the whole time during the shutdown. And it was pretty much like the most carefree lifestyle I've ever lived. I would wake up, I'd go lift, I'd sneak on the Georgia soccer field, throw, and we'd get run off like two or three times a week. And then I'd go home, we'd pick up some lunch, me and my roommate, it was just us two there in a five-bedroom house. And we'd pick up some lunch, we'd watch a show, we watched like four shows throughout lunch. Then about 3 o'clock, we'd just play Call of Duty till we went to bed. And I'm not even like much of a video game guy, like play until I got to college, but That was my schedule almost every single day. And at the time, it kind of sucked because obviously you couldn't really go anywhere. Like, we were sneaking on basketball courts, getting some shots up. So obviously trying to sneak on the soccer field to throw. There's a few restaurants opened up for pickup and stuff. But looking back, I mean, kind of took it for granted. It turned out to be a lot of fun. But, you know, obviously it was good to get back into doing things and feeling productive again.
And you guys, I'm sure, in a normal minor league season, don't get to watch a whole lot of big league games. Were you guys following that 2020 big league season maybe a little bit more closer than you normally would?
Oh, yeah. I definitely was. The Rays were also having a really good year. So, like, it was easy to be able to turn it on and check out what they were doing. So, I honestly, for being a baseball player, it's bad. I don't watch much baseball. But in 2020, I probably watched as much baseball as I'd watched, like, my whole life. Just because I was more like, I want to be outside doing stuff. So I wouldn't be in front of a TV watching. But it was interesting because you could pick up on things that, like, you maybe wouldn't have before. Like, I know, like, I kind of grew maturity wise being able to watch them, because when you're watching, I mean, you try to during a game, but everything's a lot more fast paced. Then you can kind of slow things down when you're sitting on your couch watching and pick up on things that guys are doing in the big leagues that could help you. So I guess that would probably be the biggest thing I took out of it. Other than trying to get physically ready, is trying to mentally figure out what those guys were doing and how they went about their business.
Yeah. And I was going to all the Padres home games. So that's definitely the most, like, I've got to watch in person. Cause obviously I've been to a few Braves games being in Georgia and stuff, but never that consistent. Like, I was watching them warm up, you know, I went through spring training with them. Just watching how they go about their business and then seeing it daily. Like, you don't really understand and appreciate it until you see it for, like, days in a row, and seeing, like, what relief pitchers go through to pitch two nights in a row and keep, like, staying in shape throughout the year. And then, you know, how meticulous infielders are with stuff. Like, it was really cool to see that and see their routines and what they do to stay in shape and stay healthy throughout a full season.
Now, Cole, like, I've heard from a lot of other minor leaguers, when you're in the minors, a lot of it is learning what it's like to be a big leaguer. And when you said you were getting to watch the Padres on a daily basis there, do you think you learned a lot about how to build routines, how to get ready to be a big league baseball player?
It's huge. I mean, like, think about it. When you're playing, like, baseball is our job. Like, it's an awesome job. It's the best job. But at the same time, it is our job. Like, it's what we do. And so when we go to the field at 2 o'clock, stay there till 11, we're not coming home and watching more baseball. Like, that's, you're taking your mind off of it. You're doing something else. You're playing video games. You're hanging out, playing cards. You're doing something else. So you're not doing a whole lot of, like, studying, I guess, of, you watch the highlights, scroll through Twitter. Obviously you see all that stuff. You keep up with it, but yeah. So like you said, being there and being able to see it consistently went in a time where I was just trying to learn. Like, I was new. I was figuring stuff out. And it helped me out a lot. And I was able to talk to the guys. They were awesome. The guys with the Padres, especially the pitchers who I was with, great dudes. Craig Stamm and Chris Paddock, some of those guys, helped me out a lot. And were very open to explaining stuff to me and stuff. So I appreciate those guys a lot. And obviously I appreciated the opportunity to be able to watch them and see what it takes to get there.
Before we get into talking to more about the podcast, I wanted to ask you guys, you were a part of a team that ended up being a championship team with the River Dogs this year. And even though, you know, injuries, you guys weren't there at the end of the season. What was that like being a part of such a huge part of a really successful team?
It was really fun. Like, I think at the beginning, when Cole and I were there, like, we had a really, really, like, good group of guys. Like, we were all super close.
Well, we kind of knew it when we rolled up. When we got assigned, like, we saw our list and was like I've never played low A baseball before, but I feel like this is a pretty talented group just based off my low understanding. And then obviously once we started playing the games, it was pretty obvious, like, all right, yeah, we're a lot better than a lot of these teams.
Yeah, well, I think we swept first series, right, against Myrtle Beach.
I think we lost,
or we went 5-1.
Yeah, something like that.
And so I think that was kind of when we were like okay, like, we got a pretty good squad here. And like he said, when we saw who we had rolling up, we were like, we felt like we had a high A team in low A. And I think our high A team, I feel like our whole organization felt like that. I feel like our high A team felt like they had a double A team. Our double A team felt like they had a triple A team. And I think our triple A team, the way they played, felt like they were a big league team, because I think they could have gone up there and competed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking just at the pitching staff, and obviously, Cole, you were part of that, but Seth Johnson, Taj Bradley, who had just an incredible season, Ian Seymour out of Vatek. You know, this is a pitching staff full of, like, top prospects.
Doc Sakis was there, too.
He had a great season. And then on the position player side of things, too, just an incredibly talented roster.
Two relievers that ended up in AAA at the end of the year, yeah. Colby White and Trevor Brigden, so. It was quite the staff. It really was. And we kind of knew it going in, so it was a lot of fun. We kind of took pride in competing with the guy, like, after you. Like, obviously, I was competing with Docs, especially early, two college guys. I knew him from playing against him in the SEC. Like, we both were pretty strong-willed and knew what we wanted to do. So, obviously, that was good competition. And then yeah, you saw the guys who were young but really developing, like Taj. And it was cool to see him really flip a switch. Like, it was about the time I got hurt, but he went from his first couple of outings kind of struggling, trying to figure himself out, and then it was just like, no chance. Like, if he's throwing strikes, you have no chance.
That season he had was pretty incredible to watch, because I played with him. We were same draft, so we played GCL together. We went to Princeton together, and then he was still in Princeton when I went up to Bowling Green. But he, like, this year, seeing the difference between then to now was, I mean – I got to watch him as he started, like, kicking it up a notch. And every time he stepped on the mound, it was like he was going to dominate. And he, all his pitches were working. Like, his bullpens were, if the catcher set up here, he was hitting spot. Like, he was in a trance at one point and just feeling himself.
I think, especially because you forget how young Taj is, because we graduated the same year, and he's a year younger than me.
Yeah, he classed up, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's extremely young. And for me, even in college was where I had to go through my struggling and learn. Like, everybody goes through it at some point. We talk about that a lot on our podcast, talking to guys. Everybody goes through that period. And for Taj, I think it was – he went from trying to be perfect and trying to hit spots, like really focus on hitting spots, into just getting outs. Because his stuff – you learn – your stuff is good enough to beat guys. Like, if you're getting ahead and throwing with confidence, your stuff is good enough to beat guys. And I made a joke with our Twitter account the other day, because I saw, I think it was the minor league page on Twitter. They tweeted, like, what changed for Taj Bradley this year, blah, blah. I was like, well, I became a different pitcher because I throw 100 and have a nasty cutter. Like, that makes your job a whole lot easier. Like, you do not have to be dotting up spots when you're throwing 100 and has the cutter that he has. Like, you don't. And he learned that. And he learned, I get down 2-0, so what? I have 100 in my back pocket. Like, and once he figured that out, you could just see it, and his confidence just went through the roof.
That's something I think we see with the Rays at the big league level. Is that something from a coaching standpoint? They're saying, listen, you've got the stuff, just let it play?
Yeah, I mean, they give you, like, obviously a lot of teams are database now, and it's giving pitchers a lot more confidence, I think, because they see what they do well. And then you can compare it with the other guys and see, like, okay, this pitch is really, really good. Like, this is going to be effective. So I think once you figure out what you do well and figure out how to use it, it just makes pitching so much easier. Like, you're not trying to do something you're not. You know, I mean, for years I was trying to blow people away with my fastball. High school, college, I never could. And it was 100. Like, in college it was 100 and people were squaring it up, and I couldn't figure out why. And I wasn't doing what I did well. I wasn't sinking it. I wasn't, you know, moving it around. It's not like a get by you fastball. It's a miss your barrel type thing. So once you figure out what you do well, it makes, like, obviously pitching's way easier, and the Rays do a good job of showing you what you do well. And then it's up to you to use it.
And moving on, kind of talking about your podcast, Diamonds in the Rough, where did the idea for that come from? Cause I think it's such a great idea for a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, me and Chanel had a lot of downtime last offseason end of the year last year, because we were both here rehabbing. Our days are over at noon. I mean, I got home today at 11:30. Like, you got to find something to do. And we love sports. So, like, obviously we were watching a lot of podcasts on YouTube about sports, doing a lot of stuff like that. We're like, man, that'd be fun, you know, just try to organize something like this. And then we're always, like, as baseball players, you're always telling stories. Like, you have so many stories coming up through the years, whether it's in game, out off the field, like during the game, like stuff that just goes on. It's a funny environment because there's so much, like there's guys in the field playing and then there's 15 more guys just sitting in the dugout watching. So there's so many opportunities for stuff to happen like that. And we just thought that, you know, fans don't get to hear that side. So maybe we can bring it to them. And we wanted our approach to be like, we're just sitting on a couple of stools in the locker room. Like, we're not going to ask formal questions. We're not going to be professional. We want the guys to open up when they come on. I'm not going to ask you questions like, who's the best hitter you ever faced, or who, like, just typical like media questions. Like, we want to talk like we're baseball players and talk like we do in the locker room. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Have either of you been on Neil Solon's podcast, the This Week in Rays Baseball, that he gets a lot of prospects on?
I did something with him like right after my draft in 2018. I don't know if it was on his actual podcast, but I did something with him. So I it was like a little article he wrote, I think. So I've talked to him, but I've seen that Taz was just on his.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He does a great show, but a lot of those questions are very buttoned up, very like simple. Like, what do you like to do in your free time? What is it right. like playing in the, so I've listened to that and his podcast is great, but yeah, you guys, it's definitely just like guys just talking baseball or talking whatever, right? You know, it doesn't even have to be baseball. Other things that you guys are interested in that you're not normally getting to talk about in the media throughout a season.
And that's, you know, I think me and Chanel thought we'd be a good pair because we were always cutting up in the training room, like always getting at each other. We like to have a good time. And so I think my favorite part about doing the podcast so far is people coming on, not really knowing what to expect. Like we had DL Hall a couple weeks ago, really cool dude. And he came on, it was kind of like, you know, he's trying to watch what he said at first and it was kind of slow going into it. And then a lot of times it's Chanel who says something that'll just make him laugh or open him up. And then all of a sudden it's like a flip, like a switch happens and they're just themselves. They're just open. You know, we're talking ball, talking stories. And it's really fun once that happens.
Yeah, DL, I think he was a Florida State commit before he ended up.
He was. Drafted, yeah.
So missed out on him, but that's great.
Yeah, missed out on a really good one.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. Other than DL, like another favorite guest that you guys have had, guy just get love talking to on the show.
Yeah, they've all been really, really good, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, we had Caleb Sampson on and he was one that during rehab hung out with us a ton. And stuff like that. So being able to go, like he came on for just like an opening on one of the shows. And then we actually did an interview with him and getting to talk to him. It's always fun. Cause he's pretty funny. He brings the energy every time. And we had a good time. That was kind of our core group along with like Dylan Paulson during rehab. So when we were trying to get healthy. So it's always fun to be able to talk to him. Cause we have all those stories from the training room and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the baseball world's so small, honestly. Like, if you've played against somebody, you just assume you know them. Like, if I saw somebody I'd never talked to, but we'd play against each other for a series, we'd just walk up and be like, hey, man, what's up? Like, you just know them. Like, if you play against them, you know them. So a lot of these guys, like, we know pretty much all of them that we invite. Like, obviously, we had Emerson on. He's one of my best friends. Ryan Weathers, who I love, the Miller brothers. So, like, all these guys you know really well. And those guys are the ones that come on and they know what to expect from the jump. Like they're cutting up with us. They're giving it back to us and we have stories on them. So it's been good. And it's been a whole lot of fun. It's been more fun than I expected it to be, honestly.
You guys pretty much say and mention it that this was all kind of born while you guys were rehabbing these injuries. What's like day-to-day like when you're at the facility going through rehab? Is it nice to have all those other guys there that are going through, you know, either the same thing or something similar as you?
I've said it before and it sounds terrible, but so I've signed a lease on a house in Port Charlotte and I have three bedrooms. So I'll rent out the other two to whoever's around. And people were asking me about it back home when I was back home the last couple of months. And they're like, so who do you get? Like who lives with you? And I'm like, as bad as it sounds, like you just hope that if somebody gets hurt, it's a cool guy that gets hurt. So somebody you like to hang out with. So, you know, you see they get hurt, you're like, ah, dang. But then you text them like, hey, you want to stay with me? So, yeah, it's the best to have, obviously, if you have a good group. And, you know, we're all baseball players. Way deep down, we're all the same. So, like, you get along with everybody. And it's good. It's good to meet different guys because a lot of times when you go in the minors, like, you move up with your group. You know, you don't get to know everybody. So, a lot of times in the rehab room, you meet different guys. And then, yeah, obviously you're all trying to get out. Like, that's the goal. Once you get there, you're trying to get out. So it's always good to see people leave too.
And when we were, well, I, my, uncle actually, like, before I got drafted, has a place in Northport, like 15 minutes from our facility. And so when that's where I was staying, and Cole's house was probably 15 minutes from there. And I ended up just, and I would go to the field and then come back and literally hang out at his house all day. And 90% of the nights I just crash on his couch, is that we just hang out all day. And I was like, I don't want to drive back home. So that's just kind of the, how it went for us. And I mean, you grow bond wherever you're at. Like, we grew a bond with all those guys in Charleston. When we got hurt, it stunk having to leave. And then when guys would get called up, it's like, as you're super happy for them, but you're like, dang, like, it's fun having them around. So, I mean, you go through those different emotions throughout the season, and that's just part of minor league baseball. It's part of the grind.
Now, this, you know, I know the big league level getting affected by this lockout, and we have nobody has any idea what's going to happen there. But how are you guys getting prepared for this season? Is it business as usual? I know you guys are doing some rehabbing too, so it's probably a little different. But for minor leagues right now, are they saying, you know, just get ready for a normal season?
Yeah, it's pretty much, I mean, minor leagues aren't affected by the lockout really. So, like, even if the lockout's still going on, from what I've gathered, it's minor league season starting on time, spring training same time, be ready. So, because we're not under the same kind of, they got their union, and we show up when they tell us to show up. So
for now, at least, that's the case.
Yeah, exactly.
And with the injuries you guys dealing with, is it, can you guys give any update on what the plans are for the season, when you guys are going to look to be healthy again?
Yeah, I'm full go. I left first week of November. I left Florida, and I'm good to go. I've been full on normal off season. So next year, spring training, or this coming year, spring training, I'll be good. And hopefully, I mean, plan is breaking with the team and playing a full season. So
awesome. And Cole, are you starting to look more towards 2023?
Yeah. I'm not particularly sure on, like, the exact timeline, but I start throwing pretty soon. Hopefully I'm off the mound this summer, and then, you know, maybe throw some innings in the back half, like, just in the complex, I would assume. But yeah, for full go 2023 for sure.
And guys, this is the Raise Your Voice podcast, and I'm not going to try to put you too much on the spot, but we like to have our guests kind of share their opinion on a specific Raise related thing. But basically, I got to ask you guys, if you want to raise your voice a little bit, no matter what level you guys are at, or where you're at, or what you're doing, what are your goals for this season, for the 2022 season as professional baseball players?
For me, I'd say have a full season where I'm healthy. I mean, 2018, played 19 games, broke my wrist, got a late start in 2019 because of a knee surgery. And then this past 2020 COVID, and then this past year, shoulder surgery. So, a full season where I'm healthy and just can kind of show everybody what I'm capable of throughout a full season is my biggest goal for sure. I mean, playing 50 games a year, it's tough to be able to show what you're made of and kind of prove what you can do. So getting a full season under my belt, kind of showing everybody what I can do, is definitely my biggest goal. And then I'm having a baby in May, so
becoming a father.
Man. Yep,
yeah,
so
congrats.
That's a big thing I'm looking forward to. So being able to have the baby and have a good season, those are the two goals for me.
Awesome. What about you, Cole?
Just getting healthy. Obviously, I want to get back on my feet, get back fully a full go. And so that's be the goal. You know, everything I do this year will be to prepare for the next full season. And I feel like I'm in a good spot. I'm just taking care of my body, taking care of everything else, getting stronger. And then once I get the fastball back, then it's time to go.
You guys think the podcast, is that something you're going to carry through the regular season? You're going to keep it going?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I got a text from Cole today saying, let me read what it says.
Yeah, I'll have plenty of downtime. So
yeah.
So we'll be ready to roll. And we got a lot of stuff planned for spring training, especially. We feel like it was a good time when a lot of people are looking for baseball stuff. So hopefully we can get some stuff rolling then.
He runs the Twitter and I run the Instagram. I forgot to post a little reel yesterday that he posted. So I texted him. I said, my bad, forgot to post. So I'll get it done today. Being a bad partner. And he said, all good, brother. And then he said, grind time ain't going to ease up for the next 18 years.
I was talking about your kid.
I thought you were talking about the podcast.
Either works. Yeah.
Podcast goes for 18 years. I think that's pretty successful.
Yeah, that's a long podcast.
And where can people find the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and where can they find you guys, and most importantly?
I am at Cole Wilcox 11 on Twitter. That's where I do most of my work. I don't do much on Instagram. And then it's just at DNR Pod for Twitter for the podcast. And then our podcast is on all platforms, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. So whichever one's your favorite.
Yeah. And then I'm Nick_D_Schnell on Twitter and then on Instagram. Diamonds in the Rough is it's Diamonds in the Rough Pod. And then my personal is Nick.D.Schnell7. So give us a listen, like, and subscribe.
Yeah, we got
to plug it.
Got a lot of good guests coming up too. So yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, once again, thank you guys for coming on and taking some time out of your day today.
Yeah, appreciate you having us. Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you again to both Cole Wilcox and Nick Schnell for coming on today's episode of Raise Your Voice. Before we wrap things up, there was one piece of Rays news as they signed Chris Mazza, right-handed pitcher, to a minor league deal. Mazza was acquired last year in the trade that sent Ronaldo Hernandez to the Boston Red Sox, in which the Rays acquired both Chris Mazza and Jeffrey Springs. Mazza was on pretty much the taxi squad for the entire season. It felt like him and Lewis Head taking that shuttle between St. Pete and Durham. Mazza ended up pitching 27 and a third innings for the big league club with a 4.61 ERA, and I think makes a really solid depth piece to have, again, back in the minor leagues that you can somewhat trust if you need to call him back up to eat some innings at the big league level. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. Thank you guys for listening. As always, make sure to head on over to draisebay.com to check out all of the great off-season coverage. Yes, there's tons of great stuff, even in the midst of a lockout. In terms of the podcast network, there will be a new episode of Who's on Worst releasing this week. Darby and Ashley are reviewing Sam Raimi's For Love of the Game, starring Kevin Costner. It is the third film in the Kevin Costner baseball trilogy and by far the worst. So they'll be talking about that. I'll be on that show as well. And I think we're going to start cranking out some more of those episodes while this lockout continues, while the offseason continues. Because there's not really much else to talk about on Raise Your Voice. I hope to get some more content creators similar to Cole and Nick that kind of add to the online Raise community or online baseball community as we continue to move through the offseason. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.